All praises to Allah, the creator of the universes and their sustainer, the provider of believers and unbelievers. And may his choicest blessings be on the seal of his prophets, the last of his messengers and his holy progeny. And in particular, may his incessant blessings ever continue to flow on that fourth successor to the holy prophet, on Imam Zainul Abidin, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi. Yesterday we commenced a study of the political acumen of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, and saw how he spoke to the people and altered their reactions in the bazaar of Kufa and Damascus. Time did not permit us to consider his speech in the court of Kufa, but in the court of Damascus he made a fabulous speech. I know on 1st June in 1997 we have discussed this speech, and hence I will not detain you on it, save to point out two things. That in that speech he killed two birds with one small stone. I say a small stone because he wasn't permitted enough time to speak. But he said two things in right at the commencement before he could be stopped. He said, Allah has favored us with six specialities and has given us seven excellencies. And he set them out. The first he set out was knowledge, ilm. Second was patience, sabr. And the sabr that they had just demonstrated in Karbala was beyond belief. History could not match it. And at that time in the audience were great historians of learning, for Syria was then a place of civilization in matters of art and history. And the third he said was bravery. The fourth is eloquence. The fifth is courage. And sixthly he said, Allah has given them the speciality, the exclusive speciality, that love for them is contained in the hearts of the faithful. There was no challenge to any of them. But he demonstrated to that public that the family which the Umayyads were out to destroy were at that par excellence level at which they had special qualities which no other family or no other individual could match. That combination of those six colleges that would result even in political standards, because love for them in the hearts of the people would ensure political support for them as well. So it was a threat to Yazid from all quarters, because Khilafah, it was generally accepted, would not be attainable without ilm, and piety would not be attainable without patience. And not that they gave their lives out of lack of courage, because that was their speciality, and those who were in Karbala would have noticed that already. But the second thing he did was to give eminence to that family. Till then, Yazid was seeking to show in Damascus in Syria that the Hussein he fought was a rebel. He came from the ordinary families and his purpose was to overthrow Yazid. Imam Zainul Abidin said, the excellence we have is that the Holy Prophet is from our family. So that the Muslims could see whose grandson was in fact murdered in Karbala. He says, the first speciality we have is that the Holy Prophet is from our family. Secondly, that the highest truth, Siddiqul Akbar, as he called him, Ali ibn Abi Talib, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi, he said, was from his family, so that if there was any link of grudge because of what Imam Ali alayhi salam had done, because of the people he killed in Khaybar, in Khandaq, in Ahad and in Badr, then if this was retaliatory, then the battle in Karbala was not a fair one, because the killings by Imam Ali alayhi salam were in jihad, in defense of Islam.
to kill him who killed those who were fighting Islam is to fight Islam, and indeed to kill Islam, so that the motive of Yazid would now be absolutely apparent and manifest, that he and his compatriots were out to kill him who was out to kill the enemies of Islam. And he demonstrated that point vividly. Moved on to Ja'far al-Tayyar, for who could dispute that Ja'far al-Tayyar was flying in heaven on wings? He, of course, had lost his arms in jihad. And the hadith of the Holy Prophet that Ja'far is flying in heavens in with wings given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in lieu of the arms that he had lost in jihad. Hadith of the Holy Prophet could not be contradicted. He made the point that Ja'far was from their family, and then he said the fourth luminary is Hamza. Hamza was by then regarded as the lion of Islam, and he indeed, until Karbala, he was Sayyidu Shuhada, the leader of the martyrs. And the hadith of the Holy Prophet that I am grieved if you come to visit me and do not visit Hamza, made a point to illustrate that, and then said finally, the leaders of the youths of heaven, Hassan and Hussein alayhim as-salam, belong to our family, demonstrating to the people that the one killed was a leader of the youth of heavens, was indeed the grandson of the Holy Prophet. So the whole soil, that whole plot of Yazid to keep a veil over the actual family that was murdered was totally unveiled by Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam in that short speech. I say short speech because by the time this much was illuminated to the public became fully aware of the reality of the situation and the falsehoods of Yazid. And then of course he went further to say, now that he got a breath of a moment, he said, those who know me may know me, those who may not know me should know me, but those who know me should recognize me, and went out to set out his own credentials, saying, anabnu makkatu wal mina, anabnu zamzamu wa safa, the levels to which he elevated his own pedestal was incredible, because none before him would have had the courage to call himself in that tone. And then went on to say that I am the one whose father was killed in Karbala, so no fault, he was killed entirely because he refused to make bay'ah to a zalim, and this is in the court of Yazid, and he was killed without being given water. I am the brother of one who 6 months old was killed, and when this masaib was started, when this narration of the sufferings of Imam Hussein alayhi salam was started in that court, people began to weep. People began to weep. If it is bid'ah for you to come here and weep on Hussein alayhi salam, then that bid'ah started in the court of Yazid, because the majlis was recited there by Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, and people were crying in that mosque. Seeing that situation, Yazid did not know how to control it. He could not argue back, for there was no argument for him. So, as you're well aware, he calls the muazzin to make the Qawan, and the moment Qawan started, as Yazid anticipated, perhaps if not himself, his advisors, that the grandson of the Prophet will not speak when Adhan is being announced. So as Adhan was announced, he paused and responded to each item of the Adhan. But when it came to the Muazzin saying that I bear witness that Muhammad is the Prophet, Messenger of Allah, he stopped the Muazzin, because that is the only way he could have spoken. Stops him, turns to Yazid and says, oh Yazid, tell your people who are here, who is that Muhammad? Was he your grandfather or was he my grandfather? If you say he was your grandfather, you are an unabashed liar. And if you say he was my grandfather, tell them why you killed his grandson. Now, it was impossible to deal with that situation, and the order was immediately made that all of them be taken away from the court and imprisoned in that prison that we visit even today. Well, you can see the political acumen of his personality. Having lost his family and his father, and being a prisoner, he was able to cut, as I said, kill two birds with one stone. He was able to unfold the treachery of Yazid. But the person killed was no ordinary man. He came from the highest credentials of the Holy Prophet himself. And not only that, but he was on the correct path. There was no reason to murder him at all. And this rebellion that Yazid is talking about is all falsity fabricated by him. Well, people heard, and one can see therefore that the pattern in Kufa and in Syria began to change. The philosophy of Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam was not at that time to revenge the blood of his father, not at all. His, as I said yesterday, was to continue the mission of his father, that is, revival of Islam. Yazid was out to destroy it. So to curb Yazid that his attempts to kill Islam would be foiled, and Islam would continue to flourish. And hence it was important to curb the Umayyads. And this is what he successfully did, because the people were able to see exactly the motive of Yazid, and then to see clearly what the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam stood for. Hence you will see that since then, since those speeches in Kufa and Damascus, no Khalif ever dared kill any member of the Ahlul Bayt who was proclaimed as an Imam, a Hujjah from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They used the covet method of poisoning them, but could not come out openly, and indeed even tried to veil the fact that they had poisoned them, but those facts emerged. However, even when the time came for their release, and the time came for their release only because their presence in Damascus was causing problem to Yazid. They are now in prison, but the people who had heard these speeches wanted obviously to know more. And the more they knew, the more injustice they could see. Indeed, the elders of Damascus began to say that if these innocent people were to remain in the prison in Damascus, even rain will stop showering in Damascus, and the mercy of Allah will be lost. And it is these such pressures that made him release Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. But look at the beautiful advantage Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam took of that. Even at that stage, when Yazid calls him and says, I am prepared to release you, he says, no, I will not go like that. I will only go on conditions. Now, he has the position to lay conditions. And the first condition he laid was that a house be set aside where our ladies can mourn our men, because they have not had a chance to do so. So yet another opportunity was taken. Yazid now provides a house where majlises of Imam Hussain alayhi salam were held. You can see that this allegation of bid'ah is so hopelessly false. Yazid knew exactly well as to why Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam was asking for that house. And there the ladies were holding majalises and telling the ladies of Syria exactly what the truth was and how it all happened in Karbala. So by the time they left Syria, the situation had been brought back to balance. Those falsities that Yazid wanted to perpetrate had to be curbed and got arrested. And it was important, because if Umayyads were able to continue as Yazid was, Islam would have been exterminated. And that is all that Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam was working on. But even when he left Syria and entered Medina, it was important for him to bring that message squarely into Medina. And this was because of the criticism I made last year of the Madianites. I set out to you the circumstances in which Imam Hussain alayhi salam left, how Walid asked for his bay'ah, and Imam Hussain alayhi salam decided he will leave Medina. When he left Medina, he did not leave secretly. He did not leave furtively as Abdullah bin Zubair did, as Abdullah bin Umar did. But he went to the grave of the Holy Prophet. Didn't people see him then? And indeed, it is clear in history that when the Ahlul Bayt were being mounted on their horses, a curtain was drawn in the Kuche Bani Hashim, in the lane of Bani Hashim, so that people could not enter. This they could do with their own authority. So it was no secret that he was leaving. And even when advised to leave by an unknown path, by a quiet path, Imam Hussain alayhi salam said, "No, I will not. I will take the usual highway that leads one from Medina to Makkah." So that if Walid wanted to chase him, the path was open to him. Imam Hussain alayhi salam had no reason to run away, for he wasn't running away. He wasn't running away either from Walid or from Bay'ah. He was taking steps back from violence and corruption. But at that time, therefore, the Madianites must have had some clue that he was leaving Medina. And the question I raised, indeed complaining to you last year, why didn't the Madianites rise? Why didn't they say, "Oh Walid, what you are doing is wrong. Hussein cannot be asked to make bay'ah of Yazid. We will not make bay'ah of Yazid." But you saw complete silence on the part of both Ansars and the Muhajirs. The Imam alayhi salam, of course, took his own path and left. Now when his son is coming back, you can see things being put right even on that score. He did not enter Medina. He camped outside Medina. People came to visit him. Ladies came to visit the ladies. All the treachery of Yazid was unfolded. The injustices and the cruelties that were meted out to them. Water being cut off from them. Shahzada Ali Azwar being killed in that manner were all unfolded before they even entered Medina. So that when they entered Medina, there was this noble family of the Holy Prophet entering Medina, having made every effort to ensure that Islam is saved, that a person like Yazid does not become the overlord in Islam, so that all the halal could have been made haram and all the haram could have been made halal, because that is how he was practicing them openly. And from that camp outside Medina, in respect of those who could not come out and meet them, he decided he will not go home. He would first go to the graveside of the Holy Prophet. He said, "I left from the graveside of the Holy Prophet. I will return there first." And having returned there, he made an open complaint. Now the governor of Medina was receiving total reports of what those complaints were. Historians were recording the complaints. Indeed, the historians who were in Karbala were by now already in Medina to witness what was going on, so that one could see exactly where truth lay. The Madianites found that what the historians were telling them, the journalists were saying, is exactly what the Imam was saying and exactly what the family was saying. And all those complaints to the Holy Prophet was set out in public. All that effort of Yazid to try and exterminate Islam by exterminating the family of the Holy Prophet became totally hopeless. All this through the efforts of Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam. And purely his political acumen, he saw that to rise against the Umayyads at that time was a futile exercise. There was not enough strength in the Muslims on which he could rely to proceed and make an uprising. And an uprising would have been most impolitic at that time, because the allegation already was made by the Umayyads that Imam Hussain alayhi salam was only after power he wanted to overthrow Yazid. Important thing therefore to prove was that power was not the motive of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam at all. Their motive was only to spread Islam. And hence, remaining in Medina, he started new methods of spreading Islam. One of them, as you know, is dua. And inshallah, on Tuesday night, we will make some time not to discuss the du'as, because there will be no time for that, unfortunately, but to discuss the pattern of those du'as, the ideologies behind those du'as, and the way they were tuned and termed in order to enhance Islam. A measure of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam that has achieved success to this day, 15 centuries later. He also took the path of continuing with the azar, with weeping and wailing over Imam Hussain alayhi salam for years on end. Now, true, that weeping and wailing has a religious significance. But the political significance that it had was that the Umayyads were not able to obliterate that fact from the minds of the people. Historians, politicians, as you know, had an art of moving the minds of the people from one issue to another. And we are told that a revolution will even be created. People of the government will be killed by the government only to divert attention of the people from one issue and concentrate them on the other. Lest that attempt, and those attempts were made, lest those attempts should succeed, he perpetuated the azar of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, because so long as the martyrdom of Imam Hussain alayhi salam would be remembered, that long Islam would survive. Because the basis and the ethics of that martyrdom was only for survival of Islam alayhi salam forever. And hence the survival of that martyrdom was extremely important. Attempts were made to say that this was all bid'ah. Attempts were made to say that this was the wish of Allah. Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam was at pains to crush both of those oppositions. And we should see, inshallah, in the years to come, how when that propaganda was extended, Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam set forth a hadith on the thawab for sitting in these sittings of Aba, and the thawab for weeping on Imam Hussain alayhi salam. A tradition which Imam Musa Kazim alayhi salam, and still more openly Imam Rabah alayhi salam, came to follow. So that Umayyad and Abbasid attempts to stop the azal of Imam Hussain alayhi salam totally failed. But those two steps that he took were crucial. And he took them purely politically, and took them so wisely, because who could have dared stop him recite a dua? And in that dua, he was only begging from Allah. He was only teaching us how to supplicate Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But through that medium, a lot of knowledge, a lot of information about divinity, about usul, about the Prophet, about various ahkam, about how we should behave with each other, how we should behave with our parents, how parents should behave with us, are all set out in a manner that almost makes it an exhaustive thesis by itself. And then, inshallah, on Tuesday night, I will take your time to discuss his Risalatul Huquq, his treatise on rights. I want to do that with the modern youth in mind, because today the attention of the world is on rights, human rights in particular, human dignity in essence. Well, and we say that we are fortunate to have these charters now that are coming out, and the Geneva Convention lately, and the Charter and the Human Declaration of Rights. But if we look at this document of rights of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, we can see that our modern attempts bear no comparison to the rights that he had set out. 50 of them seriatim. Of course, we will not discuss 50 of them. Time will not permit us to do so. That would require a couple of sittings by themselves. that at least we will have a perusal of it, so that our understanding of this personality is enhanced, so that when we talk of Sayyidul Sajideen, we are not only talking of someone who did his sujda, but we are talking of someone who understood that sujda. But then, as he continued with his schemes, other people had their own plans. As he entered Medina and the news of the atrocities of the Umayyads spread, people of course began to feel guilty. It dawned on them that Hussein left and we left him to leave. We did not help him. Now corruption is taking place. Now Islam could be destroyed, as Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam claimed. And hence they decided firstly to send a delegation to Damascus to examine the state of Yazid, to ascertain for themselves what kind of person they are dealing with. Are these accusations against him true? And when that deputation returned, and it returned much sooner than necessary, the deputation said it was not necessary to stay longer because the character of this man is not even a secret. He openly violates all principles of Islam. In fact, there is no principle of Islam he does not violate. There is no principle of Islam that he follows. And he violates them without restraint, without any shame at all, and without the need to apologize to his people. And when the deputation brought that report, a group of people were sitting in the Masjid al-Nabawi, the mosque we visit every time we go to Medina. In that very mosque of the Holy Prophet, there was gathered a community of people to listen to the report of the delegation. And Abdullah bin Hanzalah immediately stands up and says, if such is the case, how can we tolerate this? Isn't this what Hussein died for? And so they decided that they will have an uprising. Of the five battles I was talking yesterday, this now is the first. And this is soon after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So you can see the effect of that martyrdom. The effect that was brought to light by Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam through his political acumen, now challenging as it were the might of the Umayyad Empire. And did so quietly. These people are now aroused perhaps in the wrong way, because they were totally unprepared. As you can see in this mosque, they take an immediate decision and they set out in their fury and in their zeal. They catch hold of the governor of Yazid and dismiss him from office, and they inflict punishment on him. Marwan bin Hakam, who was the secretary of Yazid, I mentioned day before yesterday, I think, how Imam did favors to him. At that time, Marwan bin Hakam was deported from Medina. He did not know how to take care of his wife and children. Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam gave them shelter. All the Umayyads who were in charge of offices were each treated very badly. Indeed, some of them mutilated, some of them were even killed. And indeed, there was a mutiny in Medina, resulting in the total overthrow of Yazid's power in Medina. And the plan was that from Medina they will move to Mecca, and from Mecca also all the Umayyads would be dealt with severely. Yazid, of course, could not countenance all that, and he sent a huge army. Well, we know how Yazid acts. When Imam Hussein alayhi salam arrived in Karbala, he was with about 70 people. Yet Yazid sent no less than 30,000. Some historians say 120,000 people. An army of 120,000 people to fight 70 or 100 people at the most. Here again, he sent a huge force to meet these Medinites, because he realized that these are people who are fighting for principle and will fight with strength and spirit. They were being led by a ferocious commander called Muslim bin Aqaba. Indeed, it is said that Yazid first offered the commandership to Umar ibn Sa'd la'natullah, and he declined. He said, after all that I have done in Karbala, I do not have the heart of doing it again in Medina. And indeed, that murderer, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, he too refused the commandership, but Muslim bin Aqaba accepted it. So you can see what a hard-hearted, cruel person he was. And when he reached the Hurra, which is just on the outskirts of Medina, a stony place outside Medina, he encamped there, and from there he started his battle on the Madianites. He knew no mercy at all. There was no distinction between Madianite and Madianite. There was no respect for any companion of the Holy Prophet. They were all treated ruthlessly. When people began to realize that they did not have the strength to meet that army, they decided they should take refuge at the graveside of the Holy Prophet. So they all gathered in the mosque of Medina. We do that these days also, that when a danger on the community falls, it becomes easier to gather in the mosque, so that there is unity, so that there is greater strength in meeting the enemy. Well, this is what they did. Muslim bin Aqaba had no regard for the mosque of the Holy Prophet. He rode in into the mosque, his soldiers with on horseback, and there they started a carnage. Indeed, Sheikh Baskumi's report is that within that area alone in Masjid al-Nabawi, and he cites the place, Bain al-Haram wal-Minbar, that is the place which, when you visit today, there is a clear notice to say that this is Rawdun min Riyadh al-Jannah. This piece of land in the mosque of the Holy Prophet is from pieces of land of Jannah, of the paradise. In that piece of heaven, Muslim bin Aqaba and his soldiers carried out a total ravage of the Muslims, including the companions of the Holy Prophet who were there. And 700 of them, according to this report, were killed just in that place. And indeed, soon after that, when the work was over and horses had to be tied, horses were tied in the mosque of the Holy Prophet, within that area which was Rawdun min Riyadh al-Jannah. That was Muslim in Aqaba. And like Karbala, it didn't stop there. Then they started looting the houses of the Madianites. The orders always were that the house of Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam and all his properties be left sacrosanct and should not be touched at all, because these were the orders of Yazid from Damascus. And indeed, Muslim in Aqaba's security gave him information that Imam was not involved in the uprising in any way at all, did neither participated in it nor helped them overtly or covertly. But you can see the political acumen of Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam at that point in time. It is said that in respect of one companion, Sa'id bin Khudri, they went to his house. He identified himself as a companion of the Prophet. They said, fine, we will leave you, but give us all your property. And he said, I am a person who always lived in small means. I do not have property that I can give you. You can take what you like, but I do not have a kind of property that you would like. For only saying this, he was assaulted, severely beaten. His women were taken away. All his property was taken from the house. And there was a total ransack of the property of the companion of the Prophet. So you can see, there was no regard for Islam. There was no regard for luminaries of Islam. And indeed, at the end of that battle, it is said about 10,000 Madianites, Ansars and Hajireen, were killed. And Masraf bin Aqaba took charge as the Amir in authority of Medina. Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam, even at that stage, when he saw that the air had settled, visited Masraf. And when he visited him, just before he visited him, according to one report, Masraf was talking in foul language about the Imam alayhi salam. But when he saw the Imam visiting him, his total attitude changed. Some form of fear was instilled in him. He went out to welcome him, brought him in, seated him next to him, asked him about his condition, asked him how the family was, even asked him how were people whom he was giving shelter, and asked if the Imam alayhi salam needed more ration or needed more help. And the Imam alayhi salam said, well, all those small things I'm able to cope with myself. I just want one order from you, and that is, there are some of my friends who have survived this ravages of yours, but you have them in your custody. I would like to see them released. You won't believe it, instant order was made for those people to be released. Imam alayhi salam started giving his orders, gave name after name. History says he uttered 700 names and 700 people were instantly released. Now, politically all that may be in its place. I would like to divert your attention to our faith. When we say that the Imam alayhi salam knows of our sicknesses, knows of our condition, there is palpable proof of it. Who would have brought him all this information in that carnage that took place? Yet he was aware, and he was able to give 700 names off the cuff of each of his friends who was in custody, and each one of them got instant release. That is why we say today that such power exists with our current Imam, Imam Sahib al-Asr wal-Zaman, ajjalallahu farajah. But as this finished, the Meccans thought that they had the opportunity to make an uprising. So there was an uprising in Makkah as well. And Abdullah bin Zubair took the opportunity. He, opportunist as he was, took on the Umayyads in Makkah. And by the time Muslim in Aqaba came to Medina, Abdullah bin Zubair was already in authority in Makkah. Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam had no share in it at all. He did not participate in that venture at all. And let us examine the political acumen there. Abdullah bin Zubair, although ostensibly a friend of Ahlul Bayt, indeed, a Hashemite at that, we always knew he, in his own personality, was no friend of the Ahlul Bayt. Zubair, as you know, Talha, and with Talha, was fighting Imam Ali alayhi salam in Jamal. And we have discussed that in 1999. Last year I said to you how Abdullah bin Zubair was counseling Imam Hussain alayhi salam and was telling him not to go to Karbala, to remain in Makkah at a time when Yazid had already sent people to kill Imam Hussain alayhi salam whilst he was doing tawaf. That was Abdullah bin Zubair. But in order to win authority in Makkah, Abdullah bin Zubair needed strong people, and one of the strong lieutenants he had, indeed, perhaps the most courageous of all his lieutenants and of the outstanding merit, was Mukhtar. And he assured Mukhtar that if he won Makkah, then the next stage will be winning Kufa, and if he won Kufa, Mukhtar would be made the governor of Kufa. And yet, when Abdullah bin Zubair won Kufa, Mukhtar was not made the governor of Kufa. And that was because the aim and the avowed aim, the publicly declared aim of Mukhtar always was that his aim was to kill the killers of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Why should Abdullah bin Zubair not wish to give authority to Mukhtar if he was a lover of Ahlul Bayt? He would say, yes, that is what I would like to do too. Ostensibly, that was his claim as well. But he put in there someone who was an opponent of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, making manifest the wisdom of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam politically in not joining hands with Abdullah bin Zubair when Abdullah bin Zubair rose. But even that did not last long, because Muslim in Aqaba, having obtained success in Medina, moved on to Makkah. And in Makkah, he started shooting right from outside the mosque, and even threw stones at the holy Kaaba. Abdullah bin Zubair was hardly able to control the situation, but it so happened that Yazid died at about the same time. And when Yazid died, and I'm now talking of the 63rd year after Hijrah, when Yazid died, an information came that Yazid had died, these people were no longer interested in Makkah. They left Makkah. They went back to Damascus so that their authority is not disturbed. The third battle then raged in Damascus because politics brewed there. Yazid died. He was succeeded by his son Muawiyah. But this Muawiyah, Muawiyah II, was no Yazid at all. He publicly declared that my father was treacherous. His killing Hussein was murder. It was in total contravention to Islam. Killing the grandson of the Holy Prophet was a heinous error. And for that, he apologized to the Ahlul Bayt publicly and was even seeking means of restoring the Ahlul Bayt to the Khilafah in Damascus. Now the Umayyads could not have ever allowed him to do that. But you can see that those seeds sown by Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam in Damascus have produced these plants today. Had those speeches not been made, had those claims not been made as were made by Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, this son of Yazid would never have come to know what the truth of the matter was. But he was now able to apologize for it. Now the Umayyads felt that if this boy is allowed to continue in power, maybe Ahlul Bayt will come back. Imam Zainul Abidin al-Islam made no hurry about it. He remained in Medina in his political silence, teaching the Quran, reciting du'as, recalling the sufferings of his father. All that engendered faith and engendered sympathy for Ahlul Bayt and engendered true following of the Shias for Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. But on the other side, Marwan bin Hakam started his machinations and he caused this boy to give up, this son of Yazid to give up the Khilafah in 40 days, and soon after that he died. You can well imagine how he must have died. But a battle ensued. Various people stood up to claim authority. The second son, who would have been the Khalif, was a minor, so he could not succeed immediately. Marwan bin Hakam, Ubaidullah bin Ziyad, was one candidate, except that he could not muster enough support. So Ubaidullah bin Ziyad did not claim to be the Khalif for the Muslim Ummah. Can you imagine what would have happened to Islam if Ubaidullah bin Ziyad was to be a Khalif? However, Marwan was a candidate, but he was opposed. The Yemenite tribes opposed him. The Qasis supported him. And a ferocious battle took place in which Marwan succeeded. And ultimately, Marwan becomes the Khalif. He did not last long either. And once Marwan died, he didn't die. He was killed, and killed by his wife. Perhaps 30 seconds on that, the younger son, Uf Yazid, who should have become the Khalif, was the person for whom there was a community in Syria who were canvassing. And the mother of the child was canvassing. Marwan, in his machinations, decided to marry the mother of this boy, and hence a wife of Yazid. And he married her. Having married her, he thought he would now appease everything. But the day came when that particular child spoke roughly to Marwan on a certain issue. Marwan should have tackled the child. Instead of doing that, he was ferocious and he threatened the child and asked the child to behave himself. That very night, his wife, the mother of the child, decided to see the last of Marwan. She scuffled him with a pillow and held him, all in loneliness, that he could not even get assistance until he suffocated Marwan to death. This is how Marwan went. And after him came his son and Abdul Malik bin Marwan. He, of course, was far more ferocious. A religious man before he became Khalif. The moment he became Khalif, he announced, "Don't talk to me about the fear of God and don't talk to me about justice. Whatever is in the interest of this Khilafah will be just, and that will be my policy." And he went on like that, unabashed. At that particular point in time, another group of people rose. This is just a few months after the death of Yazid. This is a group led by Sulaiman bin Surd. Now this is a name you might well remember. I have discussed this at length last year when I discussed how people of Kufa decided they should call Imam Hussein alayhi salam to Kufa. At that time, that group of people which decided to invite Imam Hussein alayhi salam to Kufa was being led by this Sulaiman bin Sur. There were four people who were leaders, Mukhtar being one of them, Habib ibn Mazahir being one of them, and Sulaiman bin Sur was their leader. You can imagine the sanctity of this man when he is a leader even in the presence of Habib ibn Mazahir and of Mukhtar. He was imprisoned during the events in Karbala, like Mukhtar, and could not be in Karbala. But he was highly repentant. He felt a hideous wrong was done by him and by those who had invited Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So he gathered the people in Kufa. This is now an uprising in Kufa. We have discussed Medina, Makkah, Damascus, now Kufa. All this happening in the time of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. And he told them, how can we keep quiet? So the people said, what can we do? He said, well, we must revenge the blood of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And he set out to do that. His policy, therefore, was only revenging the blood of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in penitence. In other words, telling Imam Hussein alayhi salam that if we were not there in Karbala on the day of Ashura, it is not because we love you less. It is not because we revere you less. It is not because your cause is less important to us. Just that circumstances did not allow us. Now we set out and we would like to prove to you that if that is the answer to secure the value of your blood, then we are prepared to die. Indeed, a hadith even set out by Allama Majlisi says that before they set out on their mission, they went to Karbala and indeed sought permission from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And Sulaiman bin Sur says he saw Imam Hussein alayhi salam in his dream. And in that dream, Imam Hussein alayhi salam said to Sulaiman, oh Sulaiman, these people killed me and my family in a bitter way, in a merciless way, in a very cruel way, when there was no cause to kill me at all. Vengeance of my blood is a duty. And tell my shears that if they cannot, in their circumstances, shed blood to affect the vengeance of my blood, then the least they can do is to shed tears in my cause. And this is what we are waiting here for, to comply with that request of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, which has been sent over to us. This shedding of tears in these majlises is no mean event, is no unimportant event at all. We give emphasis to it, we give importance to it, because these tears are valuable to Sayyidul Shuhada alayhi salam himself. And it is at his behest that we hold these majlises and weep over him. Indeed, this group sets out. Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is consulted about them. He says, I cannot stop them. If they want to move out in penitence, then tawbah, of course, is important in the path of Allah. If they want to seek revenge of the blood of Hussein, the question is a different one, because will they succeed? After all, they will be met with the Umayyad forces in large numbers. And this is what happened, that it is amazing in history. We do not have the time to discuss this tonight. I apologize for this, because I apologized last year when we were discussing Mukhtar and said I will not discuss Sulaiman bin Sur, because there was no time. In those 7 nights we wanted to discuss Mukhtar, so I concentrated only on Mukhtar. But the battles fought by Sulaiman bin Sur were ferocious. Umar bin Sa'd la'natullah alayhi alone had to flee from the battlefields fighting Sulaiman bin Sur 3 times. And once when Sulaiman bin Sur says, I will do everything and follow Umar ibn Sa'd until I get him, he was told the fellow having broken his shoulder in the battle with Sulaiman bin Sur had fled to Baghdad, and he was in Baghdad receiving treatment. That was Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad also fled 3 times from the battlefield fighting the small contingent of Sulaiman bin Sur. They were 3,000-4,000 as against 30,000 of Abdul Malik bin Marwan. Ultimately, all the penitents were martyred. A few of them who were able to survive rushed out. And when they fled, they were able then to join in with Mukhtar and became part of Mukhtar's army. Exactly that was the logic of Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam in not being in the forefront of Mukhtar's army. Because Mukhtar's entire mission was different, as we discussed last year. His mission was that I will single out every murderer of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and of the companion of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and see to it that he gets punishment in this world before he gets punishment in the next. That was his mission. Now, that was too narrow a mission for a person like Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam. He was not after revenge. He was after the cause of Islam. To the extent that Mukhtar would have been able to weaken the Umayyads and to weaken their stand against Islam, Mukhtar's cause would have helped the cause of Islam and the cause of the fourth Imam alayhi salam. But that he knew was not going to happen. The concentration was going to be on the other side. Mukhtar fought, as we discussed. Ultimately Abdullah bin Zubair was the person. After all, and you can see why the Imam never joined his group at any stage. Abdullah bin Zubair sent his brother Munsab, who went and fought Mukhtar. Indeed, Munsab entered Kufa, conquered Kufa, and indeed, not only conquered Kufa, ultimately managed to become the governor of Kufa. And Mukhtar was martyred in that particular battle, which was the last battle that Mukhtar fought. Ibrahim ibn Malik al-Ashtar at that time was already out. He was out fighting Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad was already killed, but he was fighting the army of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, now taken over by Abdul Malik bin Marwan. And it is in that battle that Ibrahim ibn Malik al-Ashtar was martyred. But in all this, therefore, Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam was able to maintain a neutral stand, for which not only did he get the respect, but those uprisings got their respect as well. We are today able to revere those uprisings. When approached about Mukhtar, Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam always talked laudably of him, always said, may Allah reward him, because what he was doing was sacrosanct. Revenging the blood of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and fighting for Imam Hussein alayhi salam was a matter of great importance and eminence at that time in its own right. But that could not have been achieved, I dare say, without the seeds of those political movements being sown by Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam when they were in Kufa, in the bazaars of Kufa, in the court of Kufa and onwards to Damascus. We even have had the opportunity, alhamdulillah, in 1997 to discuss that journey the Ahlul Bayt made from Karbala to Damascus under Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam, and the miracles that were not only shown, but how the message was spread to the people and how the people turned against Yazid. In Mosul, you will remember, a group came out even to fight the army of Yazid that was taking these captives to Damascus. That was the political effect and acumen of the politics of Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam. To him, Mukhtar, therefore, was important in what he was doing. Indeed, not only did he always praise him, but it is well reported, and I think I mentioned this last year also, that when Minhal, a close companion of Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam, went to Hajj, he asked him to go to Kufa and meet Mukhtar. And when Minhal went to Kufa, and Mukhtar came to know that Minhal has arrived, he of course went out of his way to look for Minhal. And when he meets Minhal, the first thing Mukhtar asks Minhal is, "Oh Minhal, how is my Mawla Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam?" And the first thing Minhal says to him is that he sends you salams and duas. This is how the Imam treated him. And Mukhtar says, "What can I do for the Imam alayhi salam? Are there any orders for me from him?" He says, "No, there are no orders from him, but there is just one inquiry." Inquiry. And the inquiry from Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam was, Minhal says, He is asking you, O Mukhtar, when will Hurmala be arrested by you? And when will Hurmala be dealt with by you? You can see what stain Hurmala left on the heart of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. That if of all the things that Imam remembered was to ask Mukhtar when Hurmala would be arrested and be dealt with. But Allah's mercy, the moment that desire of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is mentioned to Mukhtar, whilst this conversation was on, an emissary comes and says, O Amir Mukhtar, news has arrived that Ibn Hurmala has already been arrested and he will soon be brought to your court. We dealt with last year as to how Hurmala was dealt with. You can see therefore that Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam gave great importance to those who shifted and came to the strength and support of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. One of such glorious personalities is of course Hur ibn Riyahi. Hur, we discussed at length last year. We discussed the details of the conversations that passed between him and Imam Hussain alayhi salam, and how ultimately Hur was convinced even before he entered Karbala. He was convinced at Zabala, you will remember. He was convinced at Dhu Hisn, you will remember, of the truthfulness of Imam Hussain alayhi salam and how wrong it was that anybody should fight him. Hence Hur, from the 5th of Muharram right to the 9th of Muharram, was making all efforts with Umar ibn Sa'd that some settlement be reached. And he said to Umar ibn Sa'd quite clearly, even in those days, that it would be a heinous crime to murder Hussein for no fault, and only to support a person like Yazid or a person like Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. But he was not to have it his way. On the eve of Ashura, Hur goes to the camp of Umar ibn Sa'd, and Umar says, Oh Hur, why are you today entering my tent so tremblingly, so shiveringly? I have never seen a warrior braver than you. And Hur asks only one question. He says to Umar, Oh Umar, how far has the settlement between you and Hussein reached? Because I hear the children in the tents of Hussein crying, Al-Atash, Al-Atash, Al-Atash. Why hasn't water reached them till now? And Umar says, Oh Hur, no, water is blockaded from them, even from those little children, and tomorrow is the day set. The battle was to begin this afternoon. Hussein has asked for one night. Hussein has asked for one night. And tomorrow at dawn, we shall start the battle against Hussein. Hur says no more, turns round, and says to Allah, Oh Allah, this night has been given to me as much as it has been given to Hussein. Me, I have to decide tonight whether I will go to heaven or whether I will take myself to hell. Allah, you will guide me towards the right, to the right steps and make my steps steadfast. So saying, he moves to his camp. He finds his guard there. The guard says, Hur, why are you in this stage? And the guard reports that all that Hur told him was that I now find myself in a center path. One leading to heaven, one leading to hell. And so I am in this state. It is that interim period for a man, where even a genius, when he is between insurrection and salvation. His son comes over to him, Ali, and says, Father, you are in this state. And he says, Yes, Ali, tomorrow there will be a battle between right and wrong. There'll be a battle between justice and injustice. If you want to go to heaven, come with me, because I will be going to Hussein and I will be fighting for Hussein. Ali was then surprised, but he could see the cause of his father and the justice in it. He followed his father the next morning towards the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, nearing the camp. When Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam saw people coming, vigilant as he was, he came forward and stopped. Told Imam Hussain alayhi salam, who was sitting outside his tent, that a person and an assistant are coming along, and I'm out to confront them so that they don't crash and come close to you. Imam Hussein says, Abbas, you can't confront them. That is Hur coming, and Hur no longer an enemy. Hur is coming as a friend. But Abbas, do go to Hur, but welcome him to me. You will find his side in his hands by his son. Open that handkerchief. I do not want to meet Hur with his hands tied when Abbas therefore meets Hur and tells him this. Hur says, no, Abbas, I will go in this way and I will go on my knees to Hussein, because these sounds of Al-Atash, Al-Atash have been caused by me. I have caused these children to be without water. I brought Hussein here. How can I go to him with open hands? With what face do I meet Hussein? Abbas says, no, Hur, no order of my Mawla can be disobeyed. The battle between you and me will start now on this, because I will open the handkerchief. And indeed, Abbas opened the handkerchief, but Hur went to Imam Hussein alayhi salam with his hands still tight, asking for forgiveness. Hussein says, Hur, open up your arms. Open up your arms for the mercy of Allah so that you receive it. Oh, Hur, I am ashamed. You are talking of the thirst of the children. I am ashamed about your thirst. What a host am I today that my guest would come and I would not even be able to give water to him. When battle started, this is why you find one of the first people to be mastered was Hur. But Hur said to his son Ali, what is there? What faith do I have in this world? You go and die first. It is when you have died that I will go to die. History records that when Ali, the son of Hur, fights and is ultimately martyred, and he is killed and shouts for his father, Ya Abati, Adrikani, Imam Hussein alayhi salam gallops forth. He does not even let her get to the son, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and therefore Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam reached to the body of Ali first. Imam Hussein alayhi salam consoles the son of Hur. When Hur comes, Abbas is holding Hur. He is brought to the body of the son. The son is still alive. Hur converses with Imam Hussein first, saying, Mawla, you took the trouble to come to the body of this servant even before I left. Imam Hussein said, oh Hur, I know what the death of an 18-year-old son means. I know that you're suffering and I know your feeling. I couldn't have left you alone at this moment of time. Hur, you need a companion like me at this time to sustain this loss of this young son. We turn round to Imam Hussein alayhi salam and say, Ya Sayyidu Shuhada, when Shaytan Ali Akbar was breathing his last, you were indeed alone. How did you escape that suffering? We remember that suffering till today. We salute you for it today. But how did those few moments pass off? Ala la'natullahi ala al-qawm al-zalimin. فسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون رحم الله من يقرأ الفاتحة